The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of Track Wrestling, along with a man who has a 50% chance of buying a heifer for Thanksgiving. It's Andy Hamilton of Track Wrestling.
I have a 0% chance.
No, you either you will or you won't. It's 50%.
I won't. I guarantee I'm not buying a heifer. Where would I put a heifer?
I don't know. In your backyard.
You can't have one in city limits.
It's the 50% principle. You can come up with anything.
It's 0%.
It's 50%.
It's 0%. There is a 0% chance that I'm going to have a heifer in my backyard.
What are the chances of you getting hit in the major leagues right now? You think there's a 50% chance?
No, there's not a 50% chance.
Of one hit?
Like, how many at-bats do I get?
100. Get 100 at-bats, chance
that's not
one hit.
Not a 50% chance. Like, yeah, 50% chance would be hitting 500.
No, I'm saying
50 hits.
50% chance to get one hit.
That's hitting
cent. If you get one or more, that's the 50. If you get less, you just missed out on the 50.
There aren't any games going on right now.
Well, if there was. I don't know if Quant Wrestling, who we will interview later in the show, would agree with the 50% principle. I think they have some analytics that would blow that out of the water. So we have Doug Wagner of Quant Wrestling on this show to talk analytics, which is one of our favorite topics. We have discussed PDI, which means point differential index, and they've gone way, way, way above that. Way above that. They have, I think, 450 statistics that they're analyzing wrestlers by, and we will talk with him about that. And you found out about Quant Wrestling and had conversations with them. What are your thoughts about what this can do and the movement of analytics in the sport? You wrote a great article from our visit at Duke, and this is just taking that a step further.
This is awesome. And I wish you would share with our audience your quote from when you saw it for the first time, but you probably won't.
I better not.
It's exciting. It's cutting edge stuff. It's stuff we've talked about in the past that our sport sorely lacks. It doesn't lack it anymore.
It's here. And I don't want to say wrestling is behind, but we do get set in our ways. And we're a sport driven by narrative, and it's never been a sport about metrics. And we like the conversations about back in the day when wrestler X dominated the room, and you have these great stories. We're a storytelling sport, and we still will be. It's always going to be there, but to have some fantastic analytics go along with it. Just looking at the website and getting the behind the scenes that they gave us, I just could not believe what they were pulling together. And my first thought was, how do you have the time to even do this? Like, just one dual meet seems like it would take a week long just with the analytics they're breaking down and how detailed they get. So we're going to talk with him about that, not only this week, but he's going to be a regular feature on the show. We'll have him on for 10 minutes or
so. Doug won't necessarily. It'll probably be Zach Brunson.
Yeah, wrestled.
Yeah, Illinois All-American.
Yeah.
Works for Quant Wrestling. He's going to be, I think, our regular guest. But certainly excited to have them as a partner, not just for On the Mat, but also for some content segments on Track Wrestling throughout the season.
Talk with him a little bit later. We're going to talk with Chris Bono. He's the head wrestling coach at Wisconsin. He'll be on after that. Our mailbag includes just a couple items that we didn't get to a while back. And I don't know why we didn't get a chance to talk about Joe C., who passed away. I never know if it's Joe C. or Joe Say, but he coached at Oklahoma State, coached at Cal State Bakersfield, coached at Tennessee Chattanooga. He passed away several months ago. But just a mention about his legacy and what he brought to the sport, to have 9 national championships, 7 at Bakersfield, and then really dethroned Iowa there for a while. Gable had the 9 in a row, and then Iowa State disrupted that in 87, and then Arizona State in 89, and then they won back-to-back championships, 89 and 90. Arizona State was 88, and then 89 and 90 was Oklahoma State. So a guy that probably doesn't get talked about as much as he should, but wanted to mention him and some of the great teams that he brought to the forefront for Oklahoma State. So want to make sure we mention Joe C. Another question that comes from me to me again.
I love those questions.
You do?
I love when you ask questions yourself. Those are awesome. That's my favorite.
This one comes from Kyle Klingman to Kyle Klingman. Does Andy Hamilton have a distinctive walk? And the answer is yes. If I'm walking down a hallway and I didn't know who it was, if the hood was up and I could just see the walk and the form, I could definitely tell that it's Andy Hamilton. So absolutely, he has a distinctive walk. And I'm sure a lot of people would agree with that. If they saw Andy walking, they'd say, not only does he have a distinctive walk, but there goes a champion. So great question by Kyle to Kyle. That ends our mailbag portion. And we're going to get into an interview that you had with Doug Schwab, the head wrestling coach at Northern Iowa. We cut up a clip and we posted it on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and it went like gangbusters. And what we're going to do right now is we're going to play that clip from Doug Schwab about youth weight cutting, and then we're going to talk about it.
I think, you know, we were just talking about cutting weight. I think it's just absolutely ridiculous that you'll have, you know, a kid that's an 80-pounder and he's coming down from 90 pounds, like, to win a preseason national tournament, really. And what that does, I think it just, one, I mean, it drives a love out of sport for kids. You know, I mean, cutting weight, then you start having negative associations with wrestling. I don't want any negative associations with this sport. I want it, like, this is something I love to do and enjoy doing. And when they get older and then, you know, you got to make a choice of, okay, I'm got to be a 116 or 113 pounder, and maybe I have to do it for my team or for a spot. That's not right now. And you know, I've talked to some parents about some things, and sometimes they're like, kind of roll your eyes at me, and that's okay. You know, they're your kid, but I can just tell you that I know that drives it out of the sport for a kid, and then they just don't even want to do it. And that's what I don't want.
Here's the thing about that quote. So the responses were numerous, and it got retweeted, and it got shared. And when you get responses like that, and we live in a world where people like to argue online, especially. It's just what
really?
They do. Yeah, it's just.
They do that now, huh?
It's just a big part of it, because you can kind of hide behind it and you can say what you want, and there's usually a back and forth. With this particular topic, there was no back and forth. It was all one-sided, with the exception of maybe a few comments where it went a little bit the other way. Not much, but for the most part, it was, I cut weight a lot in high school. It drove the love out of the sport for me. And 100% agree, Doug. Here's what I do. Absolutely got on board with it. Just the two that it was a little bit maybe on the other side, a guy said, agree, or I personally agree, but to each his own. So he's kind of saying, all right, I don't agree with it, but parents can do what they want to do. The other one came from Mark Munoz, who was a 2001 NCAA champion. Actually, I think they had the same years together. Doug Schwab was at Iowa. Mark Munoz was at Oklahoma State. I think they had identical time that they were in college. But this comes from Mark Munoz, who is from California. It stinks when kids cut to run away from kids at a weight class. When you get to the elite level, you can't run away from anyone because every weight is tough. I could have won more titles when I was young if I cut a few more pounds, but that means nothing now except I'm tougher. Actually, that was Nico Megalutis, who was an NCAA champion for Penn State. So that was his quote. Mark Munoz said, hey, Doug, totally agree with you. I've been telling parents this for years, but those hyper-competitive ones that are living through their child are going to cut weight to win a tournament. Now, if they do by dieting a little, I see the positive in that. So he's saying, hey, if you want to diet a little, maybe shed off a couple pounds through diet, but not the massive weight cut. That's what's funny about this. No one hopped on board and said, yeah, here's why I do it. I want my kid to win a seventh grade tournament, and I'm going to cut him down, and I'm going to use X-Lax to do it. Absolutely zero people got on board with that. So that's what's amazing to me about that. It, to me, it's so cut and dry that you should not have your kids cutting weight when you're at the youth wrestling level. And like Doug said, maybe when you get to high school, when there's a spot on the line. But you had a chance to interview Doug, and that was a small quote from a bigger conversation about youth participation and youth wrestling. But that particular quote really resonated with people because the weight cutting, the using of X-lax, the cutting 10 pounds when you're 90 pounds to get down to 80, I just don't think in any way does it have a place. And people were 100% on board with that. So it was really encouraging to hear that I don't know what parent would go on there and say, yeah, I'm going to cut my kid down 10 pounds just to win the preseason nationals. It just didn't happen. And what that says to me is that they're probably thinking they're not right on this subject, that they have no platform to stand on to say anything different other than it's the right way to maybe diet. If you want to get down a couple pounds through diet, maybe, but just let kids be kids. If they're 50.1 and it's a 50 pound weight bracket, let them go up. Don't even worry about it. I think that's what Doug Schwab would say.
Yeah. It's silly, right?
It is silly. I mean, talk about it.
Yeah. There's some stuff that's just like, come on, let's use some common sense here. And this is that, right? I mean, we're talking about why high school participation numbers have been down for the better part of the past decade. Well, fix it at the youth level. And that's where we can fix it. Like, how many kids are getting burned out of the sport before they even get to high school because of stuff like this? And some other stuff with youth wrestling could be changed that would, I think, drive a higher number of athletes to stay in the sport into high school. But yeah, this is certainly one of them. And I mean, it makes you wonder, like, would we be better off if there weren't designated weight classes at the youth level? Like, you show up, you step on the scale, you figure out how many kids are in your weight, general weight category. And then you group kids together. You figure out what the weight class is after weigh-in, instead of saying, you know what, the weight class is 83 pounds and, you know, I'm cutting down from 88 or 90. It doesn't make me feel really good about that part of the sport that's going on at the youth level. And I don't know how prevalent it is. I don't know if it's 5% or 10% or 25%. The fact that it is going on at all to me is concerning.
I think it's more prevalent, and you're right. I don't know the percentages to give you the detailed answer on that, but just my experience working at the Gable Museum and having a sauna and seeing what parents and kids would do during a major tournament like preseason nationals, like folkstyle nationals, is that there would be 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old kids in that sauna and they would cut weight. And we made a sign eventually that said, hey, no one under the age of 18 is allowed in here, but you can't keep your eye on everything at all times. Sometimes they try to sneak in there and you're just like, hey, you gotta get out. And we saw it as a real problem. But for a 5-year-old kid to be in the sauna cutting weight to try to get down to win a youth wrestling tournament just absolutely does not make sense. It doesn't develop the skills of the sport. It doesn't develop the fun of the sport. It doesn't make you that lifelong wrestling fan that Doug Schwab is talking about. And
it doesn't matter, right? I mean,
not at all.
Whether you win a youth tournament and you're 7, 8, 9 years old, or whether you go 0-2, that doesn't matter. What matters is, like what Schwab was talking about, fostering a love for the sport. You know, going out there, giving your best effort, learning from your mistakes, trying not to make them again, competing hard, showing good sportsmanship, being a good teammate. Those are the things that matter.
And when we talk about records and credentials, have we ever mentioned a youth tournament ever on this show? High school, ninth grade on, that's what we've mentioned. That's what counts. Sure. That's what matters. But is it cool maybe that you look back and maybe Mark Hall wrestled Bo Nickel. They wrestled in high school, but I don't know if they wrestled in a youth tournament at some point along the line. Maybe they did. But yeah, would it be cool to mention that and say that Dake and Taylor wrestled when they were kids? Yeah, but we aren't really looking at that and saying, hey, that's what counted on their record. And those are the epic
matches. And nobody's talking about that, right?
They are.
Like the ones that, like, I always look back at those old brackets, and it might be fun to do a study on that sometime. Like the old, Reno brackets or Tulsa, and the ones that, you know, we never heard of after that. Like, what happened? And where did they fall off the tracks?
And some people said they fell off the tracks having to binge weight cut and go down even in high school. And it really drove it out for them. And again, I like records as much as anyone. And I think it's a great service what track wrestling does in having these records where you can go back and you can see that, but don't make it fatal. Don't make it so important that you live and die by these results and that big trophy is going to dictate what your life is meaning and the validation it gets. And I would love to get inside the head of a parent who does do that, goes 90 to 80. And if that parent would talk openly about it, I don't know if he or she would, but to get inside, what's the logic? Why do you want your kid to win that bad? Is it because you didn't get what you wanted, because you feel like you need to push them to that brink, and that's this brand of parenting to make them tougher? I don't know. But when you get a guy like Doug Schwab, who is a hardline guy, he's a mentally tough guy that isn't soft in his approach, but he's flexible in his approach with youth wrestling. And I think that's the real lesson here, is that this isn't just some random guy saying this. This is a high level Division I coach who's won a national championship and made an Olympic team saying this. And I think there's some real validation on it. So glad to see the response that got and how many people really agreed with Doug's statement, because it really did go like wildfire. A lot of people were commenting on it, and a lot of people were appreciative for Doug's comments about that. As we go into our interview with Doug Wagner about statistics, anything you want to add about the statistical game or anything that you saw that people are going to enjoy about this new website?
I think it's all of it. I think it's going to be fascinating to see the response this year. I think people are really going to enjoy it. So much of it that we've kind of, you know, as we peel back the onion, it just gets better and better, right? The more that we see in there, the more fascinated we are by it. Really excited.
This is our first weekly feature with the founder of Quant Wrestling, Doug Wagner. And as we think about statistics and analytics, something that both Andy and I find a great value in, I think we have something that can change the game. Doug Wagner, you have this great website called Quant Wrestling. Take us through how you came up with this idea and how you think this is going to change wrestling.
Sure. Well, I've been a big fan of wrestling, and in my day job, we do a lot of work with quantitative analysis and data science and predictive analytics. And it occurred to me that wrestling is really the one sport where we don't see what I would call moneyball activities, you know, in using statistics and quantitative analysis. We predominantly track wins and losses. So I set out to gather statistics and try to take analysis to another level. And that was the original idea.
With statistics, we need background on what those statistics will look like. Of course, in other sports, we know about average. And as Andy has explained, a lot of the different analytics in baseball. What are some of the analytics that we're going to see in wrestling that can help us understand the sport better and to help drive interest in the sport?
Sure. It probably helps to take a step back and look at how we gather the data. So first thing we did was we created a mobile app. And just much like a kid would play a video game and press buttons, we've got our data entry folks that watch wrestling videos, and we capture the data from within a match. And by data, I'm talking about the activities in a match. So somebody shoots a left single, we capture that. And then we capture that. What was the result? You know, did it result in a takedown? Was it defended? Was it stalemated? They run out of time. And so we track the result of that activity. And we look at things like snaps and fakes and all the offensive shots that people take and the defensive reactions to them. And we timestamp them. So every match is essentially a sequence of activities that are timestamped. And then from that data, we can calculate other statistics. So, for instance, we might track how many times somebody fakes. And we know the percentage of the match or the actual seconds that they were in neutral position. So we can take the number of fakes and divide it by the seconds of neutral position and come up with snaps or fakes or snaps per minute. And so that's an example of how we would create a statistic from that activity data. And we actually create about 450 statistics. The next thing that we do is we take those statistics and we do various analytical techniques to find out which statistics actually matter, which correlate to results. And in particular, we're interested in, you know, which offensive activities correlate with scoring points and which defensive activities correlate with not having points scored against you. And so we're able to find out which statistics are actually the most important. And a lot of them are common sense, you know, things like the percentage of a match that you spend on top. That correlates with scoring a lot of points. The percentage of your shots and attacks that you score. Also, your reshot takedowns or your defensive takedowns. When your opponent shoots a shot on you and you're able to scramble and turn that into a defensive takedown, that correlates very highly. There's also some old adages in the wrestling community about things like whoever gets the first takedown in a match, you know, they have a higher probability of scoring. But we actually tested that and found out that it's very true. You know, people that get the first takedown have a tendency to win the match more often than people that don't. Another one of those old adages is, you know, being able to score in the last 20 seconds of a period. And we tested that theory as well. And we found out that that was also true, that people that score in the last 20 seconds of a period score more points, they win more. We also factor in the opponent's strength. So we calculate things like an offensive activity rating, a defensive activity rating, and a total activity rating. And so as we're evaluating the performance of a wrestler in some of our metrics, we also factor in the strength of their opponents.
Doug, when you see a hole, a need in wrestling for high-level analytics, and you've got this concept in mind, how does it go from the concept stage to where you're at now with Quant Wrestling?
Well, it started, we built a prototype for capturing the data. So it was a iOS, you know, Apple mobile app, and we tested it out, and we got with a Division I wrestling team and showed it to the coaches, and they gave us some feedback about things that they were interested in tracking and things that didn't matter. So we iterated and did another version of it. And when they liked it, we kind of locked it down. And then we set out at the end of last season to capture all of the data from the major tournaments so that we would have a base of data for our analysis. So we took the Midlands tournament, the Southern Scuffle, the Cliff Keen, and the NCAA tournament. And from that, we captured data from about 2,200 matches. And so then we took all that data, all of those activities, all those moves, and the 450 statistics that we calculate from that. And we broke it down and started doing the statistical analysis, looking for the relationships and the correlations that mattered. And then we built that into some of our tools, like our match predictor, for instance, that can take two wrestlers and predict the outcome of the match with 85% reliability and get the point spread within 1.6 points. So once we did that, we tried to build a pretty website. And the website that we have for the general public shows rankings. And those rankings are not your typical head-to-head competition rankings where A beat B and B beat C, so A can beat C. It's more based on the quantitative analysis and the data that we find is meaningful. So sometimes if you look at our rankings, they won't completely correlate with some of the major rankings that we see in the space, but they're pretty close and they're based on data. So we built those tools, and then we, you know, built the website and iterated on that till we got something that we liked. And the idea is that our subscribers are typically Division I college coaches, and we got a little bit for the general public in the form of the rankings on the homepage, and we're looking for ways to open it up to a bigger audience as we go.
What's been the response by coaches? Because a lot of times wrestling coaches, I don't want to say they're resistant to change, but it's a narrative sport, as you said. It's not steeped in analytics. What's been the response?
It's been mixed. I think every coach that's taken the time to look at it has really liked it. And I think the first thing that they have to think about is, how would I use this? And you know, the intent in my mind is that you use it to coach your own athletes and you use it to scout your opponents. You know, so if I were a coach and I were going to a tournament, and I knew who some of my key matchups were going to be, I would, you know, print out the wrestling reports for those opponents and put them in a notebook. And, you know, I'd be using that to coach my athlete as depending on who they faced in the bracket. But I would say that the coaches that are using it like it a lot. And one of the things that we get is a lot of phone calls from those coaches asking us questions that aren't readily obvious in the report. You know, I got a question the other day about, you know, if a wrestler is tied in the third period and doesn't have riding points, but he's got more riding time, what's the likelihood that he's going to win the match? And we can go into our data and actually calculate that. So there's a little bit of an element of consulting that goes along with this, where, you know, we can go into the data and find answers that are supported by that data. And in fact, it's interesting. I mentioned that we have 450 statistics that we calculate. Right now, our tools are only using about 12 of those statistics. And we're finding every day more and more things that we can glean out of the data. And we're going to try to incorporate that into the tools. In fact, we've got a data scientist that's built a neural network on top of the data with the idea being that, you know, you can use deep learning to look at a data set and find relationships that a human being could never find.
Doug, as a wrestling fan, first and foremost, you mentioned that at the top. When you go into your website, what are things that you as a fan like to go in and look at in particular? What are some of your favorite features on that site that you like to check out?
Well, I always start at the rankings. That's kind of interesting. I try to see if those make sense to me. And it's interesting because I looked at, I guess it was Gross versus DeSanto. And in our rankings, we actually show DeSanto a little bit higher. And then I went into our match predictor and ran the match predictor, and it actually showed Gross winning by a point. And so I look for things like that. And then when I see that kind of result, I go in a little deeper and look at their statistics and see why was one guy that was ranked higher than the other lose to that guy. And then I see, well, one guy's offense and some of his offensive characteristics are probably, you know, match up better against the other guy's defensive characteristics. So you can really cut it down in a pretty fine way. You know, we look at things like what type of shots does a wrestler take? Does he favor, you know, the left side versus the right side? Does he tend to go upper body? What's his success rate? You know, where does he have more success getting the takedowns? Where does he get defensive takedowns against him when he shoots? You know, what's a more risky maneuver to try? And then you can also see what is a guy's strong defense. Is he a good rider? You can see which side does he line up on predominantly, left or right, when he's in the top position. So all of those things, you know, if I were a coach, I would be looking at that. And we're going to have some future content that's going to be really interesting, where we break down individual wrestlers and break down individual dual meets.
Just going to quantwrestling.com, you pull it up and you see right away a pound for pound ranking, and Gable Steveson is number one. So take us through these numbers: OAR 96, DAR 94, and TAR 99.9. Take us through those numbers and what they mean.
Sure. So the OAR stands for the offensive activity rating. That's a 96. It's typically a scale of, you know, 0 to 100. You can actually go a little bit above 100 based on some factors that go into the formula. So with Gable at a 99.9, you know, he's doing a lot of things right. So if I go a little bit deeper, you know, based on the data we have, which is 10 matches for Gable, he's got 90% of his matches he won. He won 22% of them by decision. He won 44% of them by major decision. He won 22% by tech fall and 11 by fall. His average points scored were 12.5. His average points scored against him were 3.5. He does a good job on top. He spends 41% of the match in the top position. He scores 58% of his attacks, and 26% of the time when his opponents shoot on him, he gets the takedown. So he must be a good scrambler. He gets the first takedown in 90% of his matches, and he scores in the last 20 seconds of 27% of his periods that he's in. And he averages about 2.6 back points per match. Now, his opponent's strength is kind of in the middle of the bell curve. Is the average TAR of his opponents is 63.5. So one of the things that actually pulls his score down a little bit, if he had these same statistics for higher competition, it would boost his score. Defensively, he only spends 4% of his time in a match in the bottom position. And he gets an escape or reversal 50% of the time. His opponents scored 0% of their attacks in these matches. His opponents got the first takedown only 10% of the time, and his opponents scored in the last 20 seconds of a period 0%. They got zero back points, and so that's an example of somebody that's at the top of the heap.
As far as analytics and why wrestling is behind, why do you think it's been kind of a long game to get to this point where there's some real analytics, real data for wrestling?
Well, I think, first of all, it's hard to collect the data. You know, if you think about what goes on in a match, there's a lot of activity. And one of the things we're actually looking at, and we're working with a major university to use artificial intelligence to actually read the video and create the data. And it's not perfected yet, so it'll probably be a couple of years before that's happening. But they are using that kind of technology right now in the sport of basketball. But a lot of activity, a lot of, you know, think about a scramble where there's legs and arms everywhere. And, you know, it's just hard to capture that data. So that's the first step. And then I think, you know, the wrestling community is, you know, it's no secret, more of a blue collar sport. And it's a, you tough it out and you grind it out and you work hard. And I don't think that statistics have ever been a thing. It's always been about heart and will and guts and hard work. And so I just think there's an opportunity to add another dimension, which is more of a strategic dimension. And, you know, fine tune. If you look at the most elite athletes, the difference from between them and the really good athletes is probably just a little bit of fine tuning.
Are you excited to see where this will go?
Yeah, I am. I think, you know, we've got a handful of coaches that are using it now. We want to get more. We want to open it up to Division II and Division III and NAIA. And we also have a vision for a high school version. We probably won't be entering the data for the high schoolers, but, you know, we think that could be crowdsourced. And some of the D1 coaches that we're working with have a great interest in being able to use that same data for their recruiting and scouting.
This is fascinating stuff. We're excited to have you on this show to talk about this, or someone from Quant Wrestling to talk about this weekly and break down numbers. And Andy and I, as we mentioned, had some numerical values that were pretty archaic, but this really blows past that and opens up a whole new world to what we can do. So we appreciate this time. We appreciate this introduction and really looking forward to working with Quant Wrestling and the future of our sport.
Great. Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again.
All right. We appreciate it, man. Nice breakdown of Quant Wrestling with Doug Wagoner, and we appreciate analytics. And as we take a few minutes before we get to Chris Bono interview. There's just a lot of good things there. And when he gave us the breakdown, the rundown, and kind of a private tour of what it looks like on the site, just really couldn't believe what I was seeing. Just the numerical values that they attached to everything, how they were able to break down a match for a full 7 minutes. And when I hear 450 statistics that they're able to break down, my first question is how? How could you come up with that? And this really is the future. And I love stats. I love baseball reference. I love football reference. I love it when you explain different analytics in baseball. I never thought wrestling would get to this point. And they've gone way past what I thought was possible. And this is really a great wave of the future. And it's here now. And I just hope people will embrace it and enjoy having a statistic that you can get excited about.
Are you going to share with our listeners your line, which you told Doug?
I'm not going to share that one.
Okay.
I'm not going to share that line. But
it was a classic Klingman line.
It was more or less that it really got me excited about quant wrestling. So very excited about the future. And as we look toward what just happened and what we just saw happen with this past, we weren't just getting kicked into the wrestling season, but a few things have happened that of note, where you see some ranked wrestlers getting mildly upset and some changes in the rankings. You had an in-state rival there at the Harold Nichols Cyclone Open where Jarrett Deegan lost a match to Max Thompson. They've wrestled quite a few times, so some changes in the rankings. But it's fun to see those matchups right now, early season, and see where things can kind of shake things up in the rankings.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot going on right now. Lou Dupre over Ben Darmstadt. Taylor Venn's taking Zahid Valencia to the wire. Barn burner of a match there. Marty had a number one get upset at 141. We almost had a second number one at 141 get upset. Luke Pletcher had to go to overtime against Real Woods. Indeed, there's a lot of exciting stuff going on for the first 10 days of November or so.
And anymore, the expectation is now when a freshman either beats a good guy that's already in college, true freshman at that, and it just isn't as surprising as it used to be. I can remember back when Brian Snyder was a freshman and he was doing some great things, beating guys, and you just shook your head and you couldn't believe that a freshman was doing this well. Now it's almost the expectation of, hey, we knew this guy was going to be good. He had some great credentials. They can go in and they can light the world on fire right away. There's still a developmental process with a lot of these guys, but more and more because of RTCs, we're seeing these guys absolutely ready to go right away.
RTC is in a, you know, video too. The access to video and high level technique, unprecedented compared to, you know, 20 years ago, it was virtually impossible to find, right? I mean, if you didn't have Iowa Public Television VHS, you weren't getting to watch a lot of wrestling, right?
Just didn't see anything for the most part. Yeah.
NCAA championships were cut up into snippets, like the championship matches only.
Yeah. Couldn't really break down technique. And Tom Brands had said that now you can scroll through, you see technique and clips, and there's just virtually thousands of hours that you can get at your disposal. As long as you have a phone, it's all going to be right there for you to see. And there's just no reason that you can't have access to it. It's almost there for you. As long as you're on social media and you know how to get to those portals, the information is there.
Yeah. I mean, I could, like, just on track wrestling alone, I could probably live to be 100 and not watch, you know, do nothing but watch wrestling the rest of my life and not watch every match that's already on there.
And then
archives.
And then you take about the archives, you think about RTCs, but I think quant wrestling with the analytics, I think it's the third component that can take it to an even higher level. Just where does a guy shoot? And he talked about it. The first takedown usually wins a match. In your head, it makes sense, but now you have data to prove it. And a lot of these things that you thought were true, now you have verifiable data that says this is why it's true and this is what works, and
or it's false.
Yeah. Or you could be blown holes through it. And shooting on the edge of the mat, what happens after a stall call? Just all kinds of great data. So I really do think this has the potential to change the game. And as you've said with baseball managers, it truly is a manager now. I think that a lot of the decisions are coming from up top, and it's through some of the analytics on what to do in certain situations. And the manager is probably, his role is becoming minimized in baseball, at least.
A little bit more. Certainly less. I think there's certainly more influence from up above. And, you know, teams are investing more and more in analytic teams. And it's interesting how front offices are made up now. You get a lot of Ivy Leaguers who don't have much of a baseball background, but they are sharp analytical minds, and they're having a heavy influence over decisions that major league teams make.
And for good reason. And what was it that they said at Duke that this could be another assistant coach?
Yeah.
Just the analytics could be the next assistant coach. We have a guy right now that has a team that wants to get their highest trophy finish. I believe the highest finish was fourth for Wisconsin. We'll see if they can bump up on that. Our guest today is Chris Bono. He is in his second year as a head wrestling coach at the University of Wisconsin, doing a great job there. Team currently ranked fourth in the nation. He was an NCAA champion for Iowa State in 1996. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. When is your comeback match going to be? You keep talking about it. You said you had one more match left in the tank. When are we going to get to see that?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready. Just waiting on who's, you know, it may be a tournament. That's what I'm waiting on, I think.
How about Seth Gross? How about that being your comeback match?
I do that. I do that every day. I need a little more of a challenge.
How tough is this dude, man? He's coming back. He was an NCAA champion 2 years ago, of course, with you at South Dakota State. What's he brought to this program?
Oh, man, he's unbelievable. You know, he's a guy that you can never count out in anything. And, you know, I tell you what, I had a higher expectation, you know, in these first couple of matches of him. But, you know, it's crazy because I think that I'm so high. I think so high of him. But, man, when you sit back and think about it, he's had major back surgery. He was off the mat for one full year. And to do the things he's doing now is just incredible. And, you know, I think we finally saw the real Seth Gross, you know, in the fifth match of the season against Edinburgh. You know, he kind of got it back, you know, and I'm excited for the rest of the year.
You've been a head coach at University of Tennessee Chattanooga. You were at South Dakota State. Now you're in the Big Ten. What's it like coaching a Big Ten school?
It's completely different, I can tell you that. You know, everything from the administrative side of things to the level of competition. It's amazing the way you do your schedule, you know, and then you look at the perks too, you know, the way these student athletes are treated here and the perks these guys have and the way you can recruit. It's just amazing. So being in the Big Ten is amazing. You know, there's no better conference, in all of sports.
Is that what kids want? Do they want that big time feel to it? And do they want to be on TV? Do they articulate that to you?
Well, they don't really mention the perks. You know, I want to be on TV, or I want the benefits of being in the Big Ten. They basically say, you know, the Big Ten is the best conference. I want to be in the Big Ten. And I'll tell you what, every kid that we're recruiting, you know, you look around the country and it's, you know, four out of the five schools are, you know, Big Ten schools, or, you know, somebody decides to transfer, you know, you start talking to them, you know, three out of the five schools they're going to take visits are the Big Ten. So these kids do want Big Ten wrestling, I believe. And, you know, I'm just lucky to be a part of this conference and university and, you know, have a chance to do the things we're doing.
Can you feel a difference when your meet is on Big Ten Network?
No doubt about it, you know, especially, you know, we were only on once last year, you know, and we wound up upsetting Nebraska, and I couldn't believe it. You know, I got back to my phone, and it was like we won a national championship, the messages I was getting. And then I went to realize, you know, hey, you know, these streaming, when our matches are just on the internet, you get the real wrestling fan, you know, that pays their subscription and looks forward to watching these matches when you're streaming it. But when it's on the Big Ten Network, you get every casual wrestling fan that's, hey, I'm not going to buy the subscription, but if it's on TV, I get it, I'll watch it. And it's crazy. You know, it's crazy the exposure you get by being on the Big Ten Network for television.
With your fan base, what have they liked about the program so far? What has been the feedback from your fan base about the direction of the program?
Well, first thing with the fans are communication. You know, they, they want to be in the know. And, you know, the way I look at it is I'm trying to grow my fan base. You know, this program had a coach here for 25 years. He had his fan base. I'm trying to take his fan base and, you know, make it 100 times better. So, you know, and what I realize is they want to be in the know. You know, you can't answer, you can't, you know, call these people individually and tell them what's going on in the program, but they want information. They want to be in the know. So I try to make myself as available as possible, put stuff out there, be active on social media, just so our fans know what's going on and what to expect. And then when, you know, we have a big match or when we need something from them, we can put it out and say, hey, we need you, you know, come do this, come do that. And, the fans are loving it. You know, they're loving, you know, we've doubled our season tickets. We, you know, our attendance was the best ever last year in the history of the school. So, the fans are turning out and then of course you got to put a great product out there. And, you know, I think that we've got a great product this year. Our guys are exciting, wrestlers, right? They're not going to go out there and win 3-2. We got a lot of pinners on our team and guys just scored bonus points. So, you put a good product out there, you communicate with these guys. And then of course, the last thing is you got to win. If we, you know, when we start winning, it's even going to attract more people.
Speaking of social media, whoever is running your social media is killing it. Just a great job, great information, fun. So kudos to that. And I have to assume that you work hand in hand with whoever that person is.
Yeah, we do. You know, I learned a lot, you know, at South Dakota State when I first got there, we had nothing to show, right? When we recruit, you know, we'd show them this, we'd show them that. We had no results. So we did everything through social media. When people got to campus, they knew who I was. They knew our facilities. They knew all that. Well, I just transitioned that over here. And, you know, with the resources that we have here, our sports information department is doing an unbelievable job of, you know, and I put it on them. Hey, take it and run with it. I want information out there as much as you want to do it. And they are doing a heck of a job. You know, we're lucky enough to have some great people in our program, you know, video wise and as well as in the sports information department. So we want to put it out there. I want everybody to know what's going on in Madison. You know, when there's a match, I want them to, if they need results, they can go right to it and find it. Nobody's searching because I find myself like that. If I look for a match and I can't find it, I'll never go back to that page again because it's like, oh, they won't have it. I'll find it elsewhere. So I want them to have content. I want them to be able to find results. I want them to, you know, get to know our guys. And, you know, with that, you know, if you get people that are invested in your program, all of a sudden they might say, hey, I might go to a match or hey, I might go to the Big Ten tournament and put on my Wisconsin shirt. So it's, you know, it's a very exciting time. And then the last thing with social media is really these recruits and these kids, they want to see it. They want to be able to click on a button and listen to things. They want to click on a button and watch things. They don't want to have to search for it. So the more we can actually force feed them through social media, the more your program gets represented. And, you know, hopefully it turns on, you know, your fans, your recruits and your boosters.
Chris, you having any gatherings at local diners like you did at South Dakota State?
You know, we haven't really started that yet here. You know, we need to start it. It's just it's a little different here. Things are spread out. It's hard to get. You know, the people are far away per se, you know, at South Dakota State, it was a real small community. People could get out for lunch here. It's a little different because the community is a little more spread out. But we are doing a lot of social things, you know, before dual meets and things like that, we're having gatherings, which is a new thing. It's very, very cool.
As far as the product you're putting on the mat, you have some quality wrestlers. We mentioned Seth Gross, but another guy that that comes to mind for me is just at 165 pounds. You have a guy that in Evan Wick that really has a unique style and good on top and one of those guys that, you know, you don't want to get underneath. How has he developed and how is he going to make that run toward a national championship?
Well, he's developed, you know, he's done an unbelievable job of trying to get better. You know, that's what I love about Evan is he's never, ever satisfied, you know, and he was very, very close last year, got to the semifinals, you know, and lost a close match. But he is getting better. So everybody is always worried about him on top. He's gotten better on top, which is very, very important, you know, because a lot of these guys go out there and lay on their belly now and they'll take a stall call or two to not get turned. And he's gotten better on top now that when these guys are laying there, how to turn them, how to tilt them. And it's opened up a lot of things for him. But again, and then the other thing too is getting better a little bit on his feet. And he looks amazing right now. He's doing an unbelievable job for us. He's working harder than he's ever worked. And I'm excited for him to get into the Big Ten season so he can really get measured and see where he is. But you can never count Evan out again in anything either. So fired up for Evan and ready to have a great junior season with him.
With a takedown and escape, you essentially get 1 point. So a 4-point near fall gives you four times as many points. Does that change the way you coach or change the way you approach wrestling?
It depends on your athlete, right? I have learned a lot with being with Gross the last 4 years, or, you know, it took a year off. But and then when AJ Schopp was with me at South Dakota State, you know, we'd be sitting in the corner and it'd be whatever, a tight match, 3-2. And I, you know, let's let him up. And AJ like, no, ride him. You know, we'd be losing or we'd be losing. We're like, let him up. We need to tie him. AJ's like, no, ride him. You know, we'll get this turn. I'm like, AJ, you know, there's 45 seconds left. Ride him. And he really, really helped me as a coach to emphasize how important the top position really, really can be. But the thing with that is you've got to have your athlete really bought in that I'm going to go on top and I am going to turn people. I'm not trying to hold them down, not trying to just lay on him. And when that mentality happens and you get someone on top that's pretty good, it's a game changer. One turn, two turns is 8 points. It's a game changer. So I love the top position. You know, the last 4, 5, 6 years, and the rule change has been unbelievable. And so it's a game changer. We spend a lot of time on top in our practice room and, you know, making sure really the mentality is there that I am going to try to turn somebody and not just lay on them.
But can you imagine what that's like for the bottom wrestler to know that I'm choosing top? And this is unique to collegiate style wrestling, that you're going against a Seth Gross and he chooses top. The mentality or what that guy must be thinking.
Yeah, you know, I don't like getting in the mentality of, hey, we're going to pick top. Because if we're picking top, we're struggling to score on our feet. You know, and if we have to pick top, we'll pick top. But usually when you're picking top, it's a tight match, you know, and we're either afraid to go underneath them or we're, you know, we can't score on our feet. But yeah, if Seth Gross picks top, you know, it's deflating. If Evan Witt picks top, it's deflating to that guy because they know they're in for 2 minutes of just like, oh my gosh, how am I going to get away? Or, you know, how much energy am I going to have to spend to get away? And it's deflating. Trust me, I get underneath when Gross takes me down in the room. It's like, oh, you know, here we go. I hope he doesn't work too hard here so I can get away. But, you know, I felt it. I felt Evan on top of me, and I felt, you know, I've had personal experience with those guys trying to rip my arms off, and it's not pleasant, and you don't want to be underneath them.
But you can't get away from Wick, can you?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to say I can't. I think I could if I had to.
So maybe that's your last match is against Wick, and we'll see if you can get out from underneath.
Well, he's got to come down. He's got to make my weight, right?
Or
I'm a little guy now.
Yeah, or you could just pull the Rob Cole answer and just saying you're trying to give him confidence that you could get out any time, but you just want to give him a little boost.
That's right. Trust me. I build their confidence a lot in that room.
As far as just building for the next level, is that something you want? Do you want these guys to be thinking about world team, Olympic teams?
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. You know, we've got Gross getting ready here for the Farrell. You know, and it's just the buzz in the room is unbelievable, right? You're training him in different styles at the same time, and he's on a little different schedule than these guys. And you can see everybody looking at him and this, and, you know, trying to plan Evan's schedule and when we get him to trying to qualify, you know, a spot for the Olympic trials. So it is definitely a goal. You know, and I don't have to. The kids we're bringing in have Olympic aspirations, and that's the kids we're looking at, the kids that want to be the best at the very highest level. And that's the kids we're going to go after. And it's been nice that you can actually do that at a school like Wisconsin, and people are interested in us. And you know, I think it's the ultimate, right? You want to be a part of that building process of helping kids win, you know, winning at the highest level.
Chris, what are the challenges from a planning standpoint of trying to intermingle the college season with, you know, Olympic aspirations for 2020?
Well, I think it's a nightmare, but you know, it is what it is, right? This is what we have to do. So you do it to the best of your ability. I wish it was different. I'm not going to voice my real opinions on how I think the qualifiers for the Olympic trials should be. But again, to be doing what some of these college kids are about to do, I think it's not fair to them. You know, they're in school, they're competing for the university, they need to go win a national title. And, you know, most of them are, you know, now these are the kids, I'm telling you, that are not taking Olympic redshirt years. You know, they're trying to qualify, you know, just to qualify a spot to get to the trials. And they have to, you know, they have to do it here, they have to do it there, they have to, you know, you're taking away, you know, some of these guys are missing dual meets, some of them are doing that, some of that. I don't think that's right. Some of them are training in different styles. So you got to do what you got to do. But I wish it was a different deal. I wish there's different qualifications to make it to the trials. I'm not a guy that wants to limit opportunities. You know, I wish it was a little easier to get into the trials, you know, and give these kids, because these kids are the future. These are the guys in 4 to 8 years that you're going to see be winning Olympic medals. And if you make it real hard for them to get in the trials, it's just not developing them to get ready to when it's their time to go represent the United States.
What will Seth Gross's freestyle schedule look like? And what will we see out of him as a 57-kilo guy?
Yeah, well, I hope he qualifies this week. You know, if he qualifies this week, we're not going to wrestle. Well, and listen, I haven't really even discussed it past this week with Gross. The goal is to win this tournament right now. And then we'll figure out what's next for him, you know. So I can't even tell you what his schedule is. It's not planned out because it could change. It could change in a heartbeat. And I just know the guy's set collegiately. He wants to go win a national championship, be the Hodge winner. And then he wants to go to the Olympic trials and win that and then win the Olympics. That's what we've talked about. I think there's time after the NCAAs or actually there's, you know, two – I should say after the Olympic trials to worry about winning the Olympics. You know, the Olympic trials are in April. There's a couple of months in there that he could easily get a ton of freestyle experience in going to the tournaments. Now I know that there's seeding criteria and all that good stuff. And, I don't think we have too much interest in, you know, going to those and missing 4 or 5 dual meets and missing your chance at what your goals are here collegiately. But again, I haven't talked to him much past, let's go to the Faro, let's see how you can compete at 57, let's win this tournament, and then let's focus on you're in the trials, how do we win the Olympic Games, and how do we win a national title, and then we'll reevaluate his schedule as depending on what happens this week.
Was that a pretty easy decision for him to go down to 57? Was there any thought of going 65?
There was zero thought of it. And basically, if you know Seth Gross, the thing that makes Seth Gross great is he's got I don't want to say he's stubborn, but when he decides on something, it's a done deal. And I love that in somebody. You know, I'm making 57 kilo, I'm going to the Faro, and I'm going to win. And you know, okay, I'll make it happen. You know, let's get on your plane ticket. Let's do this. Right. I'm not going to try to talk you out of it. I don't think you're a 65 kilo right yet. In a couple of years, for sure, we can build into it. But you're making 33. You know, let's give yourself the most realistic chance of doing this. You know, I'm making 50. And this, you know what? To tell you the truth, when he came to South Dakota State, this was in the works. You know, his dream of being an Olympic champion was from day one. I'm going to win the Olympics. And that's, you know, okay. You know, let's get it done. Let's figure it out. 2020 is coming quick. How do we get there? And so when he came over this summer, it was, I'm winning the Olympics and I'm winning the NCAA championship. What's my schedule going to be like? And we got it together and here we go.
I thought there was a chance he might bump up to 141 for the college season. Now he's going on to 57 kilos for the Olympic run. Man, that's got to be a brutal cut for him.
He's doing unbelievable. You know, I mean, just yesterday he got down to 29, I think, without trying, basically, right after, you know, after our just practice in the room. And he looked at me and said, I can't believe how easy this is right now. You know, again, I was like, let's not speak before it's over. But, you know, keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, he's doing everything right. I mean, I see some abs in his gut now, you know, which is amazing. And he's doing it right. He's doing it you know, he's staying real, real wet, real hydrated. He's not taking all the water out of the system. He is just eating right. And, you know, and here's the thing too, guys, we have a world-class nutritionist here that he's never had access to ever in his life. You know, we have a guy here that plans his meals. We have a guy that, you know, explains what to eat, how much to eat. You know, we have a world-class breakfast here that these guys have access to that he has, you know, the nutritionist knows what he should eat. He, you know, the nutritionist plans those breakfasts for these guys here. So he is following the plan to a T. He's very disciplined. And again, you know, once he sets his mind to something, sometimes it's not good, right? Sometimes after the season when he wants to go hit the half-price mozzarella sticks at Applebee's, he sets his mind for, you know, eating 100 of them, he'll eat 100 of them. But he's on track. He's doing great, right? I just hope he can compete at the weight, but making the weight's going to be easy or not a problem. But I just hope he can, you know, recover and compete. We'll see where he is.
You wrestled at 150 pounds in college. Those were your last 3 years. And then when the weight class changed to 66 kilos, you moved down to that. How tough would it be to go down to 65 and lose that extra kilo if you were still competing?
Well, I don't understand the question. Right now, at this age?
I'm just saying, back in the day, when you were in your prime, could you have made that extra kilo?
66 was hard to make early in my career. You know, 2002, 2003, 2004, it was hard. As I got older, it got easier. I think I was losing some muscle or something. I was making 66 very, very easy at the end of my career. And I say easy, meaning the last weight cut was easy, you know. But you know, for me, if you told me I had to make 60 kilo, I would figure it out. Some people can do it. Some people can't. You know, it's just a matter of discipline in your body, discipline in your mind, and doing it the right way. We try to take shortcuts. We try to lose 12, 15 pounds of water in the last 2 days. That's not how you do it. You know, it's all about what you put in your body, and it's got to be a long process, and how you eat and how you train. It's not about trying to take that last 15, 20 pounds out of water. And, you know, now that I'm around a nutritionist on a daily basis, it's a game changer. So if I had this guy in my corner making weight back in the day, it'd be unbelievable. I always say this now. I go, I can't believe I accomplished what I accomplished on how I cut my weight in high school, college, and internationally. I thought I was doing everything right, and I wasn't. I was healthy, and it was, my body was doing great, but I could have been so much more effective if I had this kind of nutritionist and this kind of you know, nutritional plan.
I always go back to something that someone told me that went to Iowa State. It didn't work out for him, but he told me he felt like he had national championship ability. Like he could have gotten to the mountaintop and he could have won an NCAA championship. It did not work out. But what he said about you was he saw what you did and he said, you went to bed early. You did everything right. When you were in college, you paid the price the right way. What do you think the balance was for you between discipline and natural athletic ability?
I think it was all discipline and hard work. I didn't think I was a very good wrestler. You know, I wasn't. Coming out of high school, I was okay in high school. You know, people forget my true freshman year, I went 0-4 in my two open tournaments. And then my freshman year, I started off, I think, 0-6. And, you know, until Bobby made me move up to 150. You know, because I was not doing it right. I had zero energy. All I was worried about was cutting weight, you know, and I was worthless. And until after my freshman year, I'd won, I think I only won like 14 matches at a losing record. And I remember talking to Bobby, just saying, hey, I want to be great. What do I got to do? And he said, I've been waiting for you to come to me, you know, and it was game on. He took me under his wing and taught me how to wrestle, taught me how to work, taught me, you know, what it's going to take at this Division I level. And I just soaked it in and I listened. I hung on every word that man told me about work ethic and about, you know, what it's going to take to win and how we're going to beat this guy and how to watch a videotape on technique and pick it up and how to break down other people's videos. And so it was more about learning how to wrestle. And, you know, and that's what made me was being disciplined, working harder, as hard as I possibly could, and taking direction. I think that when someone told me to do something, I didn't say why or how come. I might have yelled and screamed, and everybody will tell you that, right? I might be like, this sucks, and I would just do it. But it was you know, taking direction and just listening to the people I had around me about how to how to try to be great and reach all my goals.
How did Bobby Douglas operate as a coach? He just got recognized by the Dan Gable Museum, but you were underneath his leadership. How was he in comparison to other coaches that you were around?
Well, I'll tell you what, I wish I was wiser back then, because now I look at it and he was ahead of the game. He was unbelievable. You know, he's not this rah-rah type motivating kind of guy, but he had his own way of motivating, you know, the things he would say to you, the things that he would do. But what I loved about him was he made me independent. I didn't need Bobby Douglas to be there rubbing my neck out to make weight. I didn't need him to rub my legs out. I didn't need Bobby Douglas going to get me a Gatorade. You know, I knew that, you know, I'll give you an example. When I had that special wrestle off in Fargo, I don't know if you remember, I had to wrestle Bill Zadik in a special wrestle off in Fargo and to make the world team. And I remember I hopped on a plane to Fargo and it was just me, carried my scale. And I had zero worries, and I'm still cutting down to 66, and it was hard for me. I had zero worries. I got there. I rented my own car, drove to the hotel. I found my own sauna. I went there. I cut my last 4 pounds all by myself. And I'll never forget this, because when I was leaving the sauna, in came Bill Zadik with Mike Zadik with Tom and Terry Brands. You know what I mean? And right there, I got fired up. You know what I mean? I was like, for some reason, you know, I don't need anybody. I'm motivated myself. I don't want people around me. I have to do it all by myself. All right. For some reason, I got a little extra motivation knowing that Bill had to have 3 people around to make sure he was going to make weight. Now, I don't know if that was true, right? But I was telling myself that, that he needed people around him. And Bobby taught me that. Bobby taught me, listen, at some point, you're going to have to take responsibility of making weight, of drilling on your own, being able to put yourself through a workout, and being able to go win, because it's only going to be you out there. I can only encourage you so much. And they really taught me independence. I know you probably don't hear that much from people, but he taught me how to motivate myself. He taught me how to be independent, and it helped me. When I went overseas with Team USA, Bobby Douglas wasn't with me. I had other coaches, other USA people, you know, and it taught me how to, here's my routine, this and this. And, you know, it's amazing what that part of it was great of what he showed me.
Did you not have a coach then at all in the corner?
No, he, this is a great story. You've never heard this, but, so he was in the corner. I lost the first match, you know, and he came over afterward, and I had gone to the hotel. We had a couple hours in between. He calls me up. He's like, you got him. Don't worry about it. You're going to win. I win the second match. This is great. This is funny. I win the second match, right? I go, and then we have a half hour or so in between. So we stay in the arena. I run out to the mat. I look over and I got nobody in my corner for the third match. 2 out of 3. There was nobody in my corner. And I look over, and I remember Nate Gallick shows up, because Nate was up there helping me. He drove up and get his brother wrestling, I think, over at Evan Fargo. And I look over, and Nate Gallick's in my corner. Right? And I don't see Bobby. I look over in the first. I go over to get toweled off. I don't see Bobby. You know, he's not in the corner. So I win that match, and I had to literally, like, speed to the airport. I had to get on a flight in a huge line to check into my flight. And I look up there, and Bobby's in the front of the line going, hey, did you win? You know what I mean? And he was waiting in line to catch his flight. And we get on the plane. I'm sitting next to him. He goes, do you remember when I told you back in the day I might not be there for your most important match and you got to figure it out? And that was it. He wasn't there. And it didn't matter to me because he had trained me well enough to know that I don't need Bobby in my corner. You know, I could go out there by myself and win a match. I'm not dependent on anybody. And you know what? That might hurt some people, but for me, I'm grateful. I was so grateful, that's one of the biggest things he's done for me, is I was so grateful, that he was not there, and he was so grateful that the training that we had done, and the things he had taught me. You know, and it sounds crazy, right? You want your coach in your corner. Yeah, I you know, but it didn't bother me one bit. I knew he had trained me well enough to go win that match with or without anyone in that corner.
Incredible story. And then you think about the people that you competed against, Bill Zadik, Doug Schwab, Jared Lawrence, Kerry Collot. Now they're all scattered out and doing well in their professions. Of course, Bill Zadik's at USA Wrestling, Doug Schwab's at Northern Iowa, Kerry Collot's at Campbell. Is there ever a part of you that kind of knows, you know what, I'm going to be competing against these guys or working with these guys long term?
Yeah, I mean, it's once you compete, you know, once you compete against these guys, and it's different wrestling, right? Because we're hand to hand combat. You always have that. You always have that in the back of your mind. You know what I mean? But I can tell you, for me now, I've, you know, I don't want to say I'm 100% over my wins and losses with people, but it all depends on the relationship you have with the people, right? Jamil Kelly has given me some of my worst losses at the, or some losses at the worst times. And, you know, it's kept me off of this and that. But I can tell you, I got a great relationship with that guy because it's how he extends himself to me as well. Some of these other guys I've never talked to. I mean, I've, you know, I talked to Doug, I talked to Colot. We're all friends and all that good stuff. And Bill, you know, we're all good friends. But some other guys I've competed against, nobody wants to talk, you know, and that's fine. It is what it is. It's what makes wrestling great. The competitiveness of all of us is our best asset, but it's also our worst, you know. And, hey, listen, I'm over it. You know, if you don't want to talk to me, then I don't want to talk to you either. You know, and if that's the way you want to be, then that's how it's got to be. But, you know, I love being around the colleagues. I love listening to, you know, even talking to those guys. Hey, remember, you know, we don't ever talk about when we've competed against each other, but I like to sit there and talk to Colot about, you know, how he trains and this and that and what he thought back in the day and how you approach things. And you learn a lot from these guys. And, you know, we can all be friends, and that's the way it should be.
So there's some guys you don't talk to, huh?
Oh, for sure. And now there's probably more reasons than just competing. You know what I mean? There's a lot of reasons. There's a lot, you know, there's more than you know. But that's neither here nor there.
How about Lincoln McElravy? Have you talked to him?
Oh, yeah. You know, when I was in South Dakota State and we wrestled Iowa, I called him that I need to get a deal in a hotel. You know anybody that can help me out? You know, he owns all those hotels in Iowa City, and he gave our team a great rate, and we stayed at his hotel, and we tried to hook up for some coffee in the morning, but he got called away or something. We never did. But Lincoln, you know, I mean, that's what I'm telling you. There's a guy I never beat. I got no animosity. Lincoln McElravy did everything the right way. You know what I mean? Lincoln McElravy made me who I am as a wrestler. I had to chase that guy, and I'm just glad that he had such high standards, and he trained hard, and he made me, you know, a better wrestler, a better person, a better, everything, better student of the sport, you know. And so there'd be nobody better, you know. If I had to lose, I don't mind losing to Lincoln McElravy because I know that guy did everything the right way.
We mentioned Evan Wick earlier, and of course the Wick family is a fantastic family. Is there a better wrestling family out there than the Wicks?
Yeah, they're great people, aren't they? They support their boys like it's like it's no other. It's great to have their support. You know, they understand, you know, that coach parent relationship. You know, they let their boys handle everything. You know what I mean? If there's ever a problem or if there's ever an issue, it's always, you know, their boys are men, right? And they come in and we talk it out. You know what I mean? And they're there for their boys and they support them like there's no other. So it's a great relationship. It's great the way they handle their kids. And it's been fun coaching them for sure.
When are we going to see a video of you jumping around?
Man, when we start pinning people in big matches, that's for sure.
I mean, that's the theme song, right? For Wisconsin, jump around.
We do it. Maybe if you came to a duel meet here in Madison, brother, you'd see it. We need to get you here.
Chris, you got a couple talented young guys that you brought in a bunch of talented young guys, but particularly 25-33. What have you learned about Eric Barnett and Kyle Berwick during the time you've had them on campus?
First of all, they're great kids. They're fun, so much fun to be around. It's amazing. You know, I love their personalities, and it's great. Second of all, the wrestling side of things, they're both very, very good. You know, Kyle Berwick is a straight throwback to the old school days. This guy will not be outworked. He'll do whatever it takes. You know, he does everything absolutely by the book. You know, and it's great. It's he's an amazing young man that works his tail off, and he can wrestle. So he's been nothing but a great example for us. the way he trains and the way he lives his life. And then Eric Barnett is, again, he's another kid that, you know, his style's a little different. He brings a little different flavor of technique in here. He's a quiet little guy and amazing, amazing person, amazing talent. I think they both have a huge future here in the next 4 or 5 years. And I'm just so happy they're on my team. And, you know, I look forward to really working with those guys.
I don't know that you got to know him really well, but Eli Stickley passed away a couple years ago. How is that still impacting the team?
Well, it still impacts our team, you know, daily. We still have his locker, you know, up in our, you know, his nameplate on our locker room. His name and everything is still up in our, you know, picture up in the field house where it should be. So we see remnants of the legacy he's left every day. And then even when you travel around the country, you see the Eli Stickley hats, you see the shirts, you see the people he's affected. So I think you see the kind of person Eli was everywhere you go. I mean, it's almost, you know, almost every Big Ten place we go, someone's got his hat on, whether it's a fan or whether it's, you know, an athlete on a different team. So I would tell you it's almost daily, especially around our campus, that you would see something that reminds you of Eli or the things he's accomplished here, not as a wrestler, but the things he's accomplished as a person and the impact he's had around here.
Chris, we appreciate this. You have a solid team, ranked fourth right now, have some really talented guys in your team, but we just want to make sure that you give us this promise that if you do wrestle again, that we can stream it live on Track Wrestling.
Hey, no, I don't know. I don't know, right? I've learned a lot of things about image and likeness and things like that. I go to the highest bidder, brother.
Yeah, well, you're smart there. You're
right,
smart.
I'm teasing. But yeah, let's get it done. Give me a match.
All right. Hey, we're owned by NBC, so I mean we've got some big pull here.
All right. Give me a match. Figure it out. Let's get rolling.
Chris Bono, we appreciate the time.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. That was Chris Bono, head wrestling coach at Wisconsin. And they have a nice team going right now. We highlighted a few of those individuals, but as we look at the run to the national championship and you look at the top four, we talked about Penn State and Iowa being the clear-cut favorites, but Penn State, Nebraska, Ohio State, Oklahoma State, Arizona State, they have nice teams that can make a push for those remaining two spots for third and fourth place. And you look up and down the lineup, and I tell you what, Wisconsin has the talent to do it.
Yeah, it's certainly a traffic jam from about three down to, shoot, even 15, 16 in our rankings. And I think, you know, one guy emerges for a certain school and all of a sudden, like, it puts him in trophy contention. And there are a lot of schools that probably think that they can walk away with a trophy this year. I think if I'm reading Wisconsin's media guide correctly, I think their best finish ever is fourth. You know, I think it would be a huge feather in Chris Bono's cap for the Badgers if in year two that they could top that, they could eclipse that this year, which I think is possible. But to me, that race for trophies this year is going to be one of the most fascinating things to watch for the team race going forward to Minneapolis.
One of the best parts is the race for the trophy, because you really do get to see four teams compete for that spot. Getting a trophy means a lot, but it really does take firepower that if you can get a Seth Gross, not just on the podium, but win a national championship again, that's just huge points and those add up. And you got Evan Wick in there. And then you just mentioned a few of the guys that are filtered in throughout. And I think they have as good of a shot as the other 15 teams that we talked about. So Wisconsin will certainly be in that hunt, and who knows what they can do in the future. They have a solid lineup coming back here in the next few years. But I like the part though with Seth Gross moving down, that we're really seeing this trend, Andy, that it's a mixed season for these high level guys. And I don't know that we saw that as much 10 years ago, even what, 3 years ago, I don't know that we saw that hybrid wrestling, and now it's just commonplace. And Chris talked about it. There aren't many spots for the Olympic trials, and these guys are going all in on that Olympic dream, and it's evident by the way they're scheduling dual meets.
Yeah, I think there's more people maybe in position now than there were in 2016, more young guys now in position than there were 3 years ago to make the team. I think that's part of it. I think also just calendars a little bit different. We're talking about a quick turnaround here between Minneapolis and then State College for the Olympic trials. So qualification standards a little bit different and process a little bit different, but it's going to be fascinating to watch.
And one of the things you don't see as much of is when you see the college schedule, there's just not a lot of tournaments that get wrestled. So you take Iowa's schedule, I think they wrestle Midlands, and that's the only tournament they have until Big Ten's Nationals. So I think in Tom Brands' mind, I don't care if we skip a dual meet. We're pretty solid. We can have Spencer Lee skip out on a couple dual meets and we're going to be fine. So the game has changed, as we've talked about, and as evidenced by how coaches are approaching the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting to see teams like Michigan, Cornell, that could be trophy contenders this year, that are, you know, I don't want to say punting, but in, you know, kind of punting on the team race this year, because look, I mean, Yanni Diakamahalis has a chance to make the Olympic team. Arujao and Max Dean, they're Olympic hopefuls, guys that have represented the United States here this year on age group world teams. Michigan already has two guys in the Olympics with Miles Amin, Stevan Micic for San Marino and Serbia, respectively. So I think at that point, you just, I look at it from their standpoint. They're loading up for 21 and 22. And Rob Cole even said that down in Fort Lauderdale at the coaches convention. Like, look, we're going to go win a couple national titles in 21 and 22.
How about Bobby Douglas skipping out on Chris Bono's match three? It's so Bobby Douglas, though. That's totally something he would do. He wasn't going to miss that
fight. Bomo, right? Bomo. That's what he used to call him, wasn't
Bomo?
It? Bomo. Bobby used to call him Bomo for a while. We should ask Chris about that.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's classic. It was fun talking with Chris Bono, and we will have more next week. It's fun that we're full swing of the college season. For Andy Hamilton, I am Kyle Klingman. You have been listening on the mat.
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.